Hey, it's Brian Cook, your host here. Wanted to let you know we now have t-shirts. Would you like to support the podcast? Have you noticed that I can't get a sponsor because this show's too filthy? Hey, it'd be great if some people ordered shirts. They're great looking shirts. Go to estoymerchandise.com, E-S-T-O-Y merchandise.com. You'll find competitive erotic fanfiction on the right-hand side. Click on that and you can order shirts. There's men's and women's sizes. It's a great design by my buddy Mark Palm in Seattle. He does all of our amazing poster art. Please support the podcast. It would help us out a ton. That's estoymerchandise.com. E-S-T-O-Y merchandise.com.
Now entering nerdist.com.
Hello and welcome to episode 139 of the Competitive Erotic Fanfiction Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Cook, and you've found the internet's number one most trusted source for Muppet boners and horny loners. Upcoming shows. September 3rd, I'm headlining the Comedy Underground in Seattle, Washington. That is a stand-up show. Special guest Heather Thompson, regular podcast performer. September 9th, Competitive Erotic Fanfiction at Helium in Portland. September 27th, fanfic at Tacoma Comedy Club. Oops, September 8th, fanfic at the Capital City Theater in Salem, Oregon. October 25th, fanfic at Union Hall in Brooklyn. Stay tuned for Philly and DC shows. Today we've got round two from a show recorded August 25th, 2014 at the Capital City Theater in Salem, Oregon. And this features Adam Pozzi, Noriko Ott, Barbara Holm, Jared Richard, and Joanne Schinderly reading pieces they wrote based upon audience suggestions. First you'll hear them draw topics, then we'll fast forward into the future to hear the finished pieces. Enjoy.
Based upon your suggestions, Barbara Holm, Joanne Schinderly, Noriko Ott, Adam Pozzi, and Jared Richard. Clap your hands, please, my fools. So, here's how this part works. I will draw one suggestion. If they like it, they can take it and run with it. If they don't like it, I'll draw a second one, but then you all will vote on which one they have to write. Let's start with Joanne Schinderly, ladies and gentlemen. Clap your hands. Joanne, your first option is Dragnet. Barack Obama. That is the president. So, with applause, who would like to hear Dragnet? Not even the person that suggested it. Which means one of you was like, oh, Dragnet's a great idea, but then you were like, oh, I didn't think of Barack Obama. Shit, that'd be tight. What's the year Barack Obama? There it is. Go horrify our nation. Barbara Holm, ladies and gentlemen. Clap your hands.
Barbara.
Barbara, step right up to the mic. Your first option is the Fantastic Four.
Come over here.
It's a podcast. We need you to use the microphone.
Okay. I think I want it, but I want to see what the other option is just in case.
All right. I just want to point out that you're a comic book nerd and you're not going for the Fantastic
Four. They're a family!
Well, so is the Partridge Family. So, you are shit out of luck. Who wants to hear the Fantastic Four? Who wants to hear the Partridge Family? I think that was a tie, but we're going with the Partridge Family. Keep it going. You can just go start writing. Keep it going for Jared Richard, ladies and gentlemen. Right over here, buddy. Let's Aerosmith this shit.
All right.
Princess Zelda is your first option.
Yeah.
Barbara wants to hear Princess Zelda.
I want to see the second one.
All right. The Last of Us? Is that a real thing?
Yeah.
Yeah? Okay. Who wants to hear Princess Zelda? Yeah. Who wants to hear The Last of Us? Jared Richard. And give it over to Adam Pozzi. Oof, they didn't clap for you much at all. Yeah. Okay. Deadwood. All right. Rubber. The movie Rubber. Which apparently is also a real thing. I don't get it. Okay, who wants to hear Deadwood? Who wants to hear whatever rubber is? Okay, Deadwood, ladies and gentlemen, Adam Pazzi. Clap your hands. Finally, Mr. Noriko Ott. Homestack Trolls? Is that a real thing? One of you wrote it, so fucking pipe up.
Homestuck is a webcomic.
Thank you. Homestock. Homestock Trolls? That's a real thing?
Yes.
All right. Let's assume that this guy is correct. Noriko, how do you feel about that?
Oh, let's move on.
All right. Dragonheart. We were just talking about this in the green room. And then underneath you wrote Sean Connery and then Richard Gere, question mark? Maybe he was in that. I don't know. All right. Who wants to hear Homestock Trolls? Dragonheart it is. Noriko Ott, ladies and gentlemen. Clap your hands for your first round two competitor, Mr. Jared Richard.
Yeah. All right. Let's hope this goes awesome, because I have never played The Last of Us. So. This is called The Secret Level for The Last of Us. The developers at Naughty Dog met with the Sony Corporation, nervous as all fuck as they pitched an add-on for the best-selling game. The Last of Us, see, what Sony did not know, is Naughty Dog started out as a porn company. Because why the fuck would you call a video game company Naughty Dog? Anyways, the only problem was, late one night, back in the 90s, on a binge of Quaaludes and Kool-Aid, the members of Naughty Dog made a bet that they could make a game called Crash Bandicoot. About a coked-out marsupial who travels the jungle, strung out of his mind with his friend a floating head, while eating floating apples and destroying even more coked-out versions of themselves, marsupials, and farm animals. Cut to 20 years later, and Naughty Dog is a massive success. But not in the passion they had intended. They had lost that. They had lost that they wanted to enter the entertainment business to begin with. To make dog-related pornography. So there, the CEO of Naughty Dog sat looking to regain the passion of why he wanted to get into the business and risk destroying the empire he had created. He knew he had to create something to build that passion. The CEO bravely made his pitch, and by clicking the right combination of buttons or by simply jamming your dick on the controller, the secret scene would begin. It opens as Joel, the single father living in Austin, Texas, as the cordyceps virus ravages the human race. Joel wondered how on earth he would explain to Ellie what sex is. You see, she has seen her share of zombie gangbangs, but he wanted to let her know the dynamics. Such as before you eye fuck someone, you usually ask for permission. Or, you know, try a different hole. Joel thought the best course of action would be to take his friend Tess and let her see firsthand what it means when a man loves a woman, even in a post-apocalyptic world. Joel gracefully takes Tess by the head and lays her on the only bed not infested with bugs or zombie semen. Joel then, without warning, jams his cock into Tess's mouth, because that's when all of a sudden a horde of cannibalistic monsters headed toward the house. They were screaming, "Cock! Cock! Cock!" Fortunately, Joel loves an audience and is instantly super hard. It has become a battle against time, and for Joel to show Ellie the proper way to bust a load into a lady's mouth. Suddenly, the door bursts open, and Joel's brother Tommy comes in, screaming, "Cock! Cock!" But only because it's the apocalypse, and that's the tradition. Zombie or not, with Tess deep in Cockville at the moment, she then begins to wonder if this three-way is about to commence. That's when Ellie jumped from the corner in which she was watching and had to do what the only deserving person would think of. She moved Ellie. Ellie pushes Tess's mouth from Joel's cock and then grabs Joel by his rock-hard monster and then at the same time grabs Tommy's cock too. Oh, she turns to both men and begins vigorously jacking them off. She turns to Tess and says, "Come on, bitch, this pussy's not going to eat itself." The zombies then began to surround the house and enter into every opening, just as every opening was being exposed of Joel, Tess, Tommy, and Ellie. Closer and closer, they enter the house, eager to devour the brains, as Tess was eager to devour both cock and vagina. Moving vigorously as a four-way Pac-Man battle royale, they got closer and closer and closer to climax. Just then, Ellie looked down at Tess and said, "When I say now, lift my legs in the air." It was just then the zombies entered the second floor living room, as is the most appropriate place to have a four-way in the apocalypse. The zombies entered both sides of the room. Ellie looked her eyes down at Tess. She then said, "Now." Ellie turned both Joel's and Tommy's cocks towards the zombie as Tess lifted Ellie's legs in the air, making her now horizontal. It was just then that, like a fire hose, Tommy and Joel busted their loads like a shotgun of semen onto the zombies. As Ellie began to squirt a flood of lady jizz like the days of Moses out of these zombies. All of the zombies, now coated in an onslaught of baby-making formula, exploded, thus causing a mass destruction of this horde. Relieved, Joel turns to Ellie and said, "How did you know?" Ellie replied with, it's the apocalypse, bitch. I didn't know what I had left to do, so I had nothing left." The scene fades out. The CEO of Naughty Dog stands at the mouth's gate from the Sony Corporation. The Sony Corporation closes their mouth, looks them straight in the eye and said, "We have a deal." Aghast, the CEO, surprised and bewildered, asked, "Really? This doesn't bother you at all?" And the Sony executive turns slowly and says, "Of course not. We've done worse shit than this. Did you see Spider-Man 2? Thank you.
Jared Richards. Can't see shit. Who do we got, round two? Who else is ready? Round two. Who do we got? Noriko Ott. Clap your hands for Noriko Ott, ladies and gentlemen.
The end of this will be perfect. I had Dragonheart, starring Richard Gere. From the mouth of the cave, a low rumbling emerged, a deep note coming from the shadows. Stepping from his horse, brave knight Dennis Quaid unsheaths his horse. You know, like the pinnacle of human masculinity he is. He doesn't have to enter the dark very far before two giant golden eyes appear suddenly before him. "Why do you come here? Why do you come here, human?" says the low voice in a perfect accent of himself. "To slay you and to bring back the fair present girl you've stole. What's your name, dragon?" "It is I, famous Scottish dragon Richard Gere." "Well, you're gonna hate this, but I'm about to crawl up your ass, Richard Gere." And just as Dennis raises his sword, a young girl jumps between him and the dragon. "Don't hurt him! He's super nice!" It was a pretty present girl, Dina Meyer. "Dina Meyer," Dennis Quaid said. "Yes, but you could call me Starship Trooper Dizzy Flores if that helps you picture me somehow." "Yeah, that'll do great. Works for me too," said the dragon. "Look, I'm the last dragon." Oh, this is the best impression. Thank God this is a podcast. Sweet Jesus. "Yes, I'm the last dragon, and that means I'm soups lonely," said multiple Oscar-winning Scottish director dragon Richard Gere. "Like, soups totes lonely?" said Astina. "Faux show." What is it you want, S. Sir Brave Dennis of the House of Quaid? Will I gladly trade you all of my treasure for just one super sick orgy? And just then he moved to the side, revealing a huge pile of gold like he just shook upside down 27 Mr. T's. You sick bastard, yelled the knight. We'll never, but Dino was already rubbing his giant dragon dick. Which was scaly, but like smooth scaly, like a snake, you know, was pretty good. And that off-putty was kind of nice. Anyway. She was rubbing him over both her arms and legs like she was riding the firehouse down to the first floor. The dragon groaned in an older yet still somehow attractive voice. Your dick is charming. Your dick is charming. I can't believe it doesn't get work. Well, you're the man now, dog, he groaned. Oh, that's right, she said, tongue-fucking the dragon's urethra. It's big, is what I'm saying. Oh, yes, hunt for Red October. I'm Richard Gere! Dina started getting really worked up and started removing her petticoat or frock or whatever, revealing her two hot, perky game hens. Let's see. Fine. I'll get in on this, but I'm not touching any fucking smog cock, okay? Said Quaid. Find the Ark, Indiana, said Richard Gere. Dennis Quaid bent the fair Dina over, exposing her hot, soupy surf twat. And thrusting forward, it wasn't long before his Martin Short found her inner space. Thank you. It was neither of their favorite sexual experience in a dark cave, but soon they were both acting as hard as they could. So it was like they were both married already. The dragon started stroking his lizard dick and said, oh yes, we should call you Randy Quaid. Said, never fucking call me that. Well, did you know dragons have dicks and vaginas as well? Dennis Quaid had to stop himself from coming immediately, which was super weird. Why did that turn him on? Oh yeah, he said, trying to sound too, like, from sounding too interested, but already pulling out of Dina's, like, ass and walking toward him. Oh yeah, it's right behind my balls and it smells like turds. And then they all made money or something.
Hands for Joanne Schinderly.
I just want to point out that whoever wrote the suggestion spelled Barack Obama wrong, so you should be jailed and not me. Dad! Sasha yelled from the controlling bathroom. What is it, dear? Barack answered. Can you come here? Can I send a maid? No, because we're the first African-American family in the White House, not as slaves. I need you, Dad. Okay, let me finish this round of World of Warcraft. Dad! Okay. Barack tightened his sweatpants and walked towards the bathroom, not getting four answers. What is it, dear? Sasha was sitting on literally a porcelain throne, with her Hello Kitty cotton panties around her ankles. She was staring at a murky brown discharge streak that had clearly just left her prepubescent body. Oh, fuck, claimed Barack. Sasha started crying. Michelle was off on some New Age mission trip where she stormed into McDonald's across the country stealing fast food out of the obese children's hands and then leaving their parents with colorful sweatbands instead of livable wages. Barack knew that he was the only man in the world to aid this situation. There was no pulling out of this bloody war. Sasha, there's no need to cry. Sasha started crying harder. But what does that mean? She yelled. That you're constantly going to have to prove yourself, fight for your rights, and learn how to defend predators, both intellectually and physically? Dad, I don't need your scholarly bullshit right now. What does that mean for my body? It means that if a functioning penis splooges inside your body, that you'll make a baby? Can I get rid of that baby? Not in all states. Will this penis love me? Probably not. It'll say it to you like 3 or 4 times, but the likelihood of it sticking around while you graduate is pretty slim. Will this blood seeping out of my little labias hurt? I don't know. I know that when your mother is ragging on the rag, she just wants me to motorboat her plump breasts and then stick it in her doggy style to get real deep to ease those cramps. Sasha said. Yeah, see, your uterine lining is shedding itself. It's a battle between you and Mother Nature, a battle much like the Civil War, where that sentence is full of analogies that I can't think of right now, but there's gold in there somewhere. Basically, your vagina is barfing mucus and blood 60 days out of the year. Can I make it stop? Kind of, but that involves a medicine called birth control, and historically the first 400 women who tried birth control in the 1950s died due to complications. Will I die if I take it? No, you won't die, but like if you take it, you won't die, but if there's some jizz monster releases his deflowering juices all over you, like inside your holes, you'll probably get pregnant, and statistically females kind of die during child labor too, so I don't know the answer, Sasha. Brock started crying quicker than his hair started graying in his first year of presidency. I can't handle this shit, he shouted. The world is fucked and I often feel responsible. Dad, Sasha said as she washed her hands and pulled up her panties. Mom's not home. Let's go to McDonald's. Afterwards, Barack's private limo pulled into the driveway. He was rubbing his full belly of fourth-tier meat patties. He leaned over, petted the head of his sleeping daughter, who now he could forever call a woman. A speech came to him, a speech that Parade magazine actually published in 2008, stating how he wished his daughters to grow up in a world with no limits on your dreams and no achievements beyond your own reach, and to grow into compassionate, connected, concerning women who will try to help build that world to live in. Barack Obama noticed his proud boner about to pop through his dark blue pleated pants. Yes. Barack Obama took a hold of his own cock, just like he took a hold of his own American dream. He stroked that shit stick until releasing 10,000 never-to-be-born jizz babies. And with one sigh, he looked at that American flag and saluted.
And keep clapping your hands for Barbara Holmes.
Delightful. 10 extra points for Barbara
Holmes. Hey, The Partridge Family, A Love Story by Barbara Holmes. It was another sunny, whimsical day in 1960s California as 17-year-old Susan Partridge woke up in the flower-decaled Volkswagen bus that her parents made her live in. Susan Partridge wiped the sleep out of her eyes and said, "Mom, may I please go to school today instead of traveling around as a touring folk band with my family?" "Shut up, you mistake," said Susan's mom. "Jan Brady Partridge, just be a good girl and smoke your morning weed." "But Mom," said Susan, "honey, in this family, you know the rules. We don't talk, we sing." "I'm sorry, Mom. I know you and Dad wanted to be famous musicians. But then me and my twin brother and Sonny Partridge ruined your dreams. Is there anything I can do to make it better?"
Jan Brady Partridge paused and looked at her 17-year-old daughter, Susan. She brushed a long strand of dark brown hair out of her daughter's eyes. You know, Susan, maybe, for once, there is something you can do to make it right. Jan Brady Partridge leaned forward and sensuously kissed her 17-year-old offspring on the lips. You suggested it. Their tongues sloppily licked each other like two slugs writhing over each other in the garden that the partridges kept in their sink. Jan Brady Partridge pulled her daughter close to her. Obviously, Susan wasn't allowed to wear bras, and so Jan felt the 17-year-old's small breasts, which were firm. Firm like any potential child services case against the Partridge family. But Mom, I really just want to go to school and practice my cheerleading like a normal kid. Susan, you can practice your cheerleading on my clit, said Jan Brady Partridge. Jan Brady Partridge led Susan's hand down her bell-bottom pants into her swampy, soupy pussy vagina. Jan Brady's vagina hair was in long dreadlocks. Naturally, from all of the magical moisture of free love and wearing the same underwear every single day. To save the planet, you guys! Conservation. As Jan Brady Partridge started coming, she made the same noise she always made when she orgasmed. Marsha, Marsha, Marsha. Jan Brady Partridge's pussy made a juicy, squelchy noise, and Jan froze. That's it, Susan. That's our song. Get the recorder. We've been looking for a sound like this. Susan obediently placed the recorder near her mother's crotch and pressed a chord. Susan plunged her hand deep into her mother's peace, love, and understanding. Susan wiggled her fingers back and forth, up and down, triggering Jan's G-spot, and Jan squirted all over her daughter's arms. Squelch, 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 said Jan's vagina. Mom? Susan? Said a voice. It was Sunny Partridge, said Susan's twin. Sorry to interrupt, but I did something naughty, and I think I need to be spanked. What did you do? Said Jan Partridge Brady. And remember to sing, Sunny dear. I called Child Protective Services on you. You psychotic fucking hippie cunt. Just then, the door to the bus Volkswagen knocked, like the thump of a headboard slamming into a wall during sexual intercourse fornication. Not that Sunny and Susan Partridge knew what that would sound like, because in the Partridge family, they weren't allowed to have beds, because beds were dream prisons of the bourgeoisie. Sunny went down to open the door. A tall young man stood there. He had short blonde hair, a perfectly chiseled jaw, bright blue eyes, an impish smile, and he was wearing all blue spandex. Hi, I'm from Child Protective Services. My name is Johnny Storm. From the Fantastic Four. Later, Johnny Storm was walking through the courthouse after taking the Partridge family children away from their awful parents. Susan sat alone in the courthouse crying, and Johnny Storm came up to her, placing his hand gently on her shoulder. What's wrong, Susan? Asked Johnny Storm. I don't know what I'm going to do now. I had my whole life planned out in front of me. I was going to travel the world singing songs about loving people with my family, and now I have my whole life ahead of me. Well, why don't I help you by liberating you from your clothes the same way I liberated you from that domestic abuse situation? Johnny Storm bent down and kissed Susan Partridge on her full 17-year-old lips, kissing down her neck and zipping her pants. Johnny Storm went down, down like Jessica Alba's popularity after she did the Fantastic Four film. Susan gasped in pleasure. She had never been with a man before. Not that being with a man is inherently better or worse, it's just subjective and case-by-case scenario.
But Susan had never been with a man before. Really, she hadn't been with anyone who didn't force her to wear a flower crown in her pussy hair. That's what her mom did.
Don't be weird.
Johnny Storm ripped a hole in his electric blue tight leggings, and he had the biggest dick in the world, maybe. It protruded through his leggings, said Johnny Storm, dick on. Johnny penetrated Susan Partridge's tight pussy, which was wetter than her tears, about losing her family. He thrust it rhythmically and deeply, his wiener shifting up and nudging her G-spot. Susan came all over the pile of paperwork emancipating her from her horrible family. You think he's big, said a voice from behind them. Check out my stretching abilities. Said Reed Richards, Johnny Storm's brother-in-law. Susan stuttered, trying to get through her orgasm. But wait, aren't you, like, married? Reed Richards said, yeah, but it's one of those Portland marriages. Johnny Storm withdrew his giant dick wiener from Susan's vagina and slid it consensually into her mouth. She could taste herself on him, and she liked it. Reed Richards shoved his dick into Susan Partridge's flower garden. Inside her, Reed Richards' dick grew 3 sizes that day. Stretching deep into Susan Partridge's beautiful vagina pussy, pressing up against her G-spot, Susan squirted everywhere and screamed in pleasure, and her screams were on perfect pitch. And she was very grateful that the thing wasn't there. Thank you.
Barbara Hall. And your final competitor, Adam Posse, ladies and gentlemen.
I got dead wood.
See a doctor.
The show opens with a scene of Seth Bullock saying the word cocksucker a bunch of times in a row. Cut to Wild Bill Hickok playing cards in a saloon. 2 other men and a guy with a droopy eyelid named Jack are also playing with him. Jan's taunting Bill, saying, clock can't be right all the time, Bill. I reckon you done lost 8 in a row to me. You gotta be due to win 1. Seeing that Bill doesn't have enough chips to cover his bet, Jack calls to the bartender to cover his credit. Bill says it's not necessary and puts one of his pearl-handed six-shooters up on the table. Jack says, I can't take your gun, Bill. It's worth at least 40 more than my raise, but I'll tell you what, I'll throw in 50 more and my manhood for the set. Cut to a scene of Al Swearingen saying the word cocksucker a bunch of times in a row. Back at the card game, everyone raises their eyebrows at the prospect of Jack putting his butt-ginity up for Bill's guns. Everybody but Jack because of his fucked up eye. Bill takes the bet. Cut to Calamity Jane saying the word cocksucker a bunch of times in a row. They show their cards. Jack, with a lot of swagger, presents a flush to the 9. Bill has a flush Jack high, ironically. Bill stands saying, I aim to collect payment now, Jack. One of Jack's eyes went wide while the other went normal. We're right now, Jack stammered. The bartender said, all right, fellas, we don't want no trouble in here. Take that shit outside. Bill grabs Jack by the collar and drags him out of the bar. Quick cut to Wayne Unsler from Sons of Anarchy saying the word cocksucker a bunch of times in a row. In the alleyway, Jack's removing his pants, telling Bill he's gonna pay his bet. Jack bends over, exposing his never-before-tapped mineshaft to Bill. Wild Bill immediately shoves his old western-style dick hilt deep into Jack's horse trough. By old western-style, I mean uncircumcised. Cut to Saul Starr, the Jewish dude, saying cocksucker a bunch of times in a row. Back in the alley, Bill is thrusting away in a manner that can only be described as wild. Jack Ever, the antagonist, mocks Bill. I don't see why you're all excited all of a sudden, Bill. You only won a single game of cards. Bill, equal parts angry and horny, turns Jack around and puts him on his knees. He then says, Jack, that game is all that was standing between you and getting called a cunt. He then slaps him in the face with his dick. That dropped hood on your eye looks like a cunt to me. He then pokes him in the eye with his dick. When you talk, your mouth looks like a cunt moving. I don't want to fight you, Bill, Jack said. Yes, but you will run your cunt mouth at me, Bill said, shoving his dick in Jack's mouth so deep that Jack's face was chafed by Bill's thighs, which were heavily calloused from many days spent a horse. While bucking to completion, Bill then whispers, and I will take it to play poker and fuck dudes. The screen fades to black and it says to be continued in season 3. A few months later, cut to show creator David Milch saying the word cocksucker a bunch of times in a row. Thank you guys.
All right, our posse. Let's get everybody from round 2 back up. Clap your hands for round 2 comics. So, once again, you guys will be voting on a winner, and once again, I'm going to remind you first of what everybody read. We started with Jared Richard with The Last of Us, then Noriko Ott with Dragonheart, Joanne Schinderly with Barack Obama, Barbara Holm with The Partridge Family, and finally Adam Posse with Deadwood. So, pick a favorite with your applause, starting with Jared Richard, The Last of Us. Yeah! Noriko Ott, Dragonheart. Joanne Schinderly, Barack Obama. Barbara Holm, Partridge Family. And Adam Posse, Deadwood. I believe that's your very own Jared Richard, your auntie champion. With The Last of Us. Congrats, Jared. Also, Jared's the one that contacted me about coming down here and doing the show, and I really appreciate him doing that. So a round of applause for Jared. For promoting this wonderful theater. That's been our show. Thank you guys so much for coming out. Hope to come back again. Check out the podcast on iTunes every week. And I've been your host, Brian Cook. Have a great night. Thanks, guys.
That does it for round 2. To hear round 1 from this show, you can go back and download episode 138 right now. If you like what you heard, please subscribe and rate us on iTunes. It's a big help, as are positive comments. And for more details, you can follow me on Twitter at Brian Cooking or the show at CE Fanfic. See you next time.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.